Radio. You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
If you've listened to The Pet Doctor in the past, you may have heard an interview regarding how advances in veterinary medicine can translate into addressing the same ills for people, and vice versa. Today, I'm going to be more literal, translating how an American-born and trained veterinarian moved to China to work and live. My guest is Dr. Jennifer Repack. We'll start what should be a fascinating conversation of a stranger in a unique land after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
People say less is more. At Red Barn, we think less is better. It's what you won't find that sets our natural premium pet food apart. No byproducts, no corn or soy, no fillers. Just the natural ingredients your pets need to live the healthy life they deserve. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Naturals Pet Food. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Try our grain-free rolled food. It's protein-packed with less risk of food sensitivity.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Repack, thank you for being with us. I mean, what a story. Number one, give us a little bit about your background. Where were you born and raised? Where you went to vet school?
Hi, so I'm originally from California. I grew up, went to Berkeley and Davis, and I actually originally went to China in 2006 on a veterinary externship and fell in love with the place. But before going to China, I realized that I had to work a little bit in the States and do things a little bit more, something more to what I'm used to back at home. So I practiced in New York City for 4 years and then decided that I was ready to move to China.
That's a major change. I mean, I've known classmates and colleagues who've gone to Europe or maybe England, someplace where you can speak the language. Had you ever been to China before?
Well, in 2006, it was my first time on the externship, and that's actually originally when I met my former boss, Mary Peng, at ICVS, the International Center for Veterinary Services. And I just fell in love with the international lifestyle. I loved being in a foreign place, and I loved learning Chinese at that time, and decided I definitely have to come back. At that time, I was very excited, and Mary says, "You have to wait a little bit. You have to practice medicine a little bit, and then you can throw the monkey wrench in your lifestyle and go to China." And now I realize what she's talking about.
So this externship, it was in 2006, I believe you said?
Yes, right before the Olympics.
Ah, it must have been just an amazing energy there in the city with the Olympics coming to town. So you didn't know Chinese. Why did you choose China?
Well, actually, I'm fortunate enough that I have some Chinese relatives. So my mom is American-born Chinese, and so she has a lot of family history in China. We have a lot of relatives distributed in Taiwan, Beijing, Shanghai, all over the place. So that actually, I think, really made it for me personally. I think it changes things so much having family there. And especially in China, family is so important. I mean, it's important in the States, but even if you're a distant relative of someone, they welcome you in as family. And it's really, coming from a country where brothers and sisters don't speak to each other for years over little quarrels and whatnot, it made a very deep impression on me that, you know, my family was so welcoming to me. So I wanted to get in touch with my roots, I guess, so to speak.
Now, with your mother being a Chinese American, did you speak Chinese at home? Because honestly, I'm going to be going to China soon, and I've looked at the language and it's like, oh boy, yes, this is definitely Chinese to me. This is not something that rolls off my tongue.
Well, when I was little, when I was very little, I had a babysitter who would speak Cantonese to me. Unfortunately, my mom was raised to be as Americanized as possible. Her parents immigrated, and they wanted their children to fit in. And at that time, the trend of thinking was that kids should not learn their parents' native language. And so I just kind of am self-taught.
Very good. So I'm sure listening to it as a child maybe had some of the neural connections there, made it possibly a little easier for you. How long? So you were there in 2006 for how long?
I was there just for a summer.
Okay.
And just to get my feet wet, yeah. And then decided I always wanted to come back. So it was always in my plans and my grand plans to return to China and live there.
So you went from New York area, and then you said, okay, let's go to another big city, probably a heck of a lot bigger. Let's go to Beijing. What was that transition like? How did you find places to live? You were going to be working at the International Veterinary Care Center, correct? That's the name of it?
International Center for Veterinary Services.
So close.
ICVS. All right. Yeah, so close. I know so much acronyms in this industry. So actually, it was very seamless in the beginning because they have a program where a lot of these vets come from all over the place and are in the same position where they have no idea what's what. I was very lucky that Mary situated a place to live for me that ended up working out long term. So that part wasn't too much of an issue. As far as being in a big city, Beijing nowadays has, I joke that it has everything that you could ever want besides clean air and water. So, and surprisingly, you can get by without those things. So,
you don't need
it's
to
a very
breathe
fun
or
place.
Drink. No, no, it's fine.
Yeah, right, right. Well, you drink bottled water and you wear a mask on really bad days, and you'd be surprised what people get by with. But it's got, you know, all of the things that I enjoyed doing back home, even Western activities. There's just so many cultures there now that, I mean, I joke that I met more French people in Beijing than I ever met before anywhere else.
So how long were you in country the second time around?
The second time I was there for a year and 8 months.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you took your dog with you.
Yes, I brought my little chihuahua with me. It's a one dog, one person policy for immigration. So I had two, one stay with mom and dad, and then my little chihuahua was taken with me. She's the lucky one.
Now, I understand that certain countries have some very strict rules on bringing pets, and clients will come to me many times, and being in Southern California, they're going down to Mexico for a vacation. They're going to be gone for 2 weeks, and they want to take their pet. It's like, really? You may just want to leave this kid at home with you. How difficult was it for you to take your little chihuahua into China?
Yeah, so I that's one of the things that we deal with a lot at the International Center for Veterinary Services, because most of our clients are foreign. So because China requires a 30-day quarantine coming into the country, I don't recommend vacationing with your pet to China. It's too hard on them. The quarantine is, you know, very safe. Of course, they feed and take care of your pet, but it's very stressful for animals that are older. Fortunately, my dog is, you know, on the younger side and on the sturdier side. The other one is a little more anxious, so I didn't bring him.
Are you able to visit them while they're in quarantine?
I don't think so. I don't know personally. But, you know, depending on who you talk to, there's pet import companies that can help assist you with the process. And it seems that people do pretty well going through them, too. Sometimes they can make things a little easier in different ways. But the rules are always changing on these things. However, going back home to the U.S., it's surprisingly easy. No problem.
Okay.
No quarantine, no whatsoever. So we just sailed right on in.
I mean, that must have been stressful, knowing that you're having to give up control of your pet. You know, it's a long flight. It's there. It's 30 days. Yes, you hope, expect that they'll take excellent care, but still your baby's not with you, and that's a long time.
Right, right. Well, luckily she made it in fine. So, but yeah, it's not something that I would do every year. We have a lot of clients that go away for vacation and want to take their pet back in. And I said, you really don't want to do that. I don't think if it was up to them, they would want to do it.
So that seems like that was just a big challenge. What were some of the other really big challenges you faced? So you had to learn the language. What else? How about food and getting around, or just even the culture of how Chinese think of pets?
Well, I had a lot of challenges with language, of course. Also, the medicine is a little bit different than what I'm used to back in the States. It's a little bit like going back in time about 50 years. So we don't always view things the same way, and that was probably one of the biggest things that surprised me. Now, I didn't really know what to expect. I had been here in 2006, or there in 2006, and visited, but also I was only a vet student at the time, and I wasn't really paying attention to the degree a doctor would. And so seeing the big differences in terms of educational background and practices, standard of care, that is quite difficult for a doctor to kind of jump into right away. But it was also very, very interesting. There's a lot of things that are not available in China that we, in the U.S., we have almost pretty much everything. I mean, there's some European drugs that are new that maybe we haven't reached our markets yet, but pretty much we have everything for pets. So we're really, really lucky. Whereas in China, the drugs are very tightly regulated. Pain medication in pets, opioids, don't have. We just don't have them. They're black market or gray market only. And you really have to question your sources of medications. You really have to be, maybe there's somebody that would be willing to sell you pain medication, but then can you really trust where it's coming from? So that was actually another really big struggle, is the lack of resources. And also, well, it was just starting to get established, but the lack of laboratory diagnostics that were available. We were sending everything to Germany when I first started there. Eventually, a lab in Tianjin opened up for animals, but
Long turnaround time, sending something to Germany.
Sure. 10 days or 14 days. Yeah. And so that was a big struggle. And also, where do you send your biopsies? That's also a complicated thing there. Can you trust the person reading them? Because there are no specialists. So even if you send it to the university, there's no specialist there. So it was more to our comfort level to be able to send it outside and just wait longer for a specialist to read.
I find it interesting being, a very fortunate veterinarian to have laboratory pickup 3 times a day. I send something out in the morning. I have results back later on that afternoon, and that's just expected for me. And it's like, if it's a Saturday, I have in-hospital point-of-service machinery that I can get most of my laboratory answers. Are things like that available where you have in-hospital diagnostics?
Well, we do. We do have in-house analyzers. A lot of places have CBC chemistry machines in-house, and it's more maybe like how it used to be a while ago, where most things are done in-house. Nowadays in the States, it's more cost-effective to send things out to your reference laboratory, even if it's a basic. But, the culture and sensitivity would be done in-house, so like plating everything.
Looking for infections, right?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so the plating of the bacteria for infections for UTI, if you're checking for UTI, for example, would be done in-house. But as far as getting if you wanted to do a more extensive thyroid panel, then you have to go and wait that long wait. So that makes certain kinds of emergency cases quite difficult when you're trying to get some answers. And you learn to be really flexible, and also you learn
creative.
To kind of just give up. Yeah, you give up in certain places about sticking to the book. Let's put it that way. Sometimes you can't be so stubborn about certain things, by doing things exactly as you have learned, because you have to be flexible. It actually kind of reminds me of when I first started cooking. And when you first start cooking and you get recipes, right, and you feel I would be so worried about having to follow every single ingredient. If I didn't have a lime versus a lemon, then, you know, I would be worried that the whole thing would be off. But then, you know, then you worry about the wrong things. And eventually when you get more comfortable, you substitute things in and you say, okay, well, maybe I don't need this or that. And that's basically what ends up happening. You have to evolve and you have to be flexible and you have to, you know, be open-minded to a different way of doing things.
And creative.
Yes, and creative. And creative, exactly. So, yeah, the things that you might usually reach for won't be there, but you can trust that somebody else has probably been doing something similar to you with whatever is there, and just to be open to giving that a shot.
So it sounds like you learned how to become the MacGyver in veterinary medicine.
Yeah.
Making do with what you had.
Surviving in the sticks. And yeah, and sometimes some owners will have to get prescriptions in the States and have them and then hand carry them, you know, prescribed for their dog legally so that they can use them in China. There's just some things that you can't get from a reliable source. And there will be clinics that will buy them from Taobao, which is the Chinese equivalent of eBay. But how shady is that?
Right. You have to wonder, even here in the States, getting things sometimes online. Well, we're online right now and talking to Dr. Jennifer Repack, a veterinarian who spent 18 months in China. We're going to be right back after this short break and learn a little bit about how we've heard what veterinary medicine is like. What's pet ownership like? What's their thinking towards pets these days? So we're going to be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's designerpetsweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit designerpetsweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. designerpetsweaters.com.
Calling all pet product manufacturers and pet experts. Let the public relations and marketing professionals at Whitegate PR get you featured in the news. I'm Dana Humphrey at Whitegate PR, and we have been specializing in pet product PR for over 10 years and can get your brand featured in the media, from TV to radio to print to blogs. You can find out more at www.whitegatepr.com.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Jennifer, I find this absolutely fascinating. Yes, I could see where, okay, you're going to have to MacGyver a little bit. You're going to have to be very resourceful as to you don't have all those diagnostics that you learned in veterinary school that you were using when you were practicing in New York. And now it's like, okay, what do I do? Pet owners, how do they view pets? Here, they're definitely part of the family. You were saying you're practicing medicine there kind of as we did 50 years ago in the States. 50 years ago for us, those pets were really outside animals, maybe came in every once in a while, but they definitely weren't the furry four-legged kids. What's the thought process there now in China?
Well, China is changing so much all the time, and it's actually kind of a confusing thing because you have a lot of people in China. You have some extremely wealthy people, and you have some people that have very little money at all. And what's happening as the upper middle class is growing at an alarming rate, you have more and more people that are getting into pets. And what it really shows to me is that pets are a luxury item. And so the more money you have to spend on your pets, the more you're able to dote on them and care on them. And people maybe in more rural areas, probably very similar to in the States, maybe view animals as more of the livestock variety. something also that was interesting is that most of the training in veterinary school, even today, is agriculture-based. And I have some associates even that didn't really get trained much in pets in veterinary school. So a lot of that training was more of an agricultural perspective. Now, it's not like it's necessarily all bad versus all good. It's just different. And I think what really helped me relate and understand the perspective a little bit is to think about how people in my field do in the agricultural setting. How do they work in the agricultural setting? And it is a little bit of a similar mindset.
So some pets are definitely part of the family, and some of them are more of that enjoyable companion, but not going to have maybe some of the severe attachments that we have here.
Right. So some are more animals that, you know, they're of a different ranking, and others are members of the family. They're the baby, you know, anything for the baby. Also, a lot of my clients were foreign clients too, and so a lot of the foreign clients had, you know, were very much babying their animals and had brought them from various parts of the country. But I would say now in China, the status of animals is changing, and it really, really depends on the person's background. Also, a lot of Chinese people were not allowed to have dogs when they were younger because the cost of registration was too high. It got lowered in the last 10 years or so. And so a lot of people are having pets for the first time. And so it's very interesting because they just didn't grow up in this culture of pet ownership and general knowledge that dogs are supposed to get vaccines and this is how you take care of a dog and whatnot. So it's still a very novel thing, which is very interesting. Whereas in the States, everybody kind of has some basic level of what pets require. So it really varies.
So it's a lot of education that centers such as yours, the International Center for Veterinary Services, is rendering. As you were talking a little bit before about going on to the internet when you're there because you don't have access to all medications and have to be concerned about the sourcing, and we've heard here in the United States that, yes, there have been issues with tainted food products for people as well as pets. How much does that affect how people are caring for their pets? Where do they get their safe products for themselves and for their animals?
Well, it's tricky because some people choose to just buy whatever, which I wouldn't recommend. What we always tell people is that if you buy online, it's pretty much buyer beware. There's no way you can guarantee that that product was stored properly, that it wasn't tampered with. The best thing to do is, when you're buying pet food, for example, is to buy from a facility that is a licensed seller. So there's really two brands. I think it's just Purina and it's Real Canin in China that are sold through the totally legal channels. Now, if you go to a regular pet store, you will see all kinds of brands from all over the world, but I don't know where those are coming from. Pedigree is also one of the brands that are legally registered to sell in China. So the best thing to do is just make sure that you see some kind of seal of approval that the store is getting this food through a registered source. And it can be very hard. It can be very hard because there's lots of things online. You want to buy them.
And I can imagine. Also expensive to get these products.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, you hear stories. I mean, there's definitely all kinds of worse stories in the news, but even more silly stories where a whole family buys a bunch of sunscreen on Taobao and they put it on and then they get burned to a crisp because it's fake, you know. And so you just get used to this. Everything could be fake. And there's this feeling that, you know, you can't really trust products, and it's a little scary, but you just have to go with what you can trust. And sometimes that ends up being more boring than all the options that it looks like you have, but it's better to go with what you trust.
So you learn not to totally trust everything that you saw, and definitely not everything you saw on the internet, which hopefully people kind of catch on here sometimes too. It seems to be a little bit more fortunate. What else did you, as an American veterinarian, learn from your Chinese counterparts?
Well, actually, I was able to learn a lot about exotic animal medicine. I mean, there's a lot of exotic animals that are becoming quite popular in the markets in China. And so, as somebody who's mostly cat and dog back in New York City, it was quite a bit of a challenge for me. So,
what's the most fascinating animal you worked on?
So see birds. We would see macaws. We had a bunch of little turtles come in. Those are quite popular. The Chinese market is just full of, they even have squirrels in the Chinese market and chinchillas and rabbits. It's pretty much everything. And, oh, I also saw a three-legged bearded dragon that came in with a fungal infection. Huh. So, yeah, so, you know, we see all kinds of things. And so it really kind of gave me an opportunity to work on some different species that I was used to. And, you know, the learning process went both ways.
I understand you're also into acupuncture and herbology. That's a perfect place to have your skills honed.
Right, right. Actually, you know, there was a lot of, I had a great opportunity to go and help with the Qi Institute in Guangzhou. They have a course that they do for international people taught in English. And so I was able to help my professor in Guangzhou with his acupuncture course. I was surprised. One of the biggest surprises for a lot of people is that in veterinary medicine, Chinese medicine is sort of a lost art. So it's not really practiced as much as you might think. In fact, I think there's more energy and enthusiasm about it in the West recently. So it'll be very interesting to see if my teacher is Dr. Shea from the Qi Institute, and it'll be interesting to see if he's able to rejuvenate that spirit back into China, which is one of his goals. But you do a little bit of herbs. It was a little bit challenging because the herbs are all in Chinese. They're made for people. And they contain some things that maybe I wouldn't want to give pets, like acetaminophen, which is Tylenol.
Uh-huh.
So you really have to know what you're doing, and you really have to read every single ingredient on that list before you give it to an animal. And even then, there's also issues with heavy metals and whatnot that we have to be careful of. But for the most part, I would just stick with the really safe stuff. The stuff that I knew was safe, and I didn't do as much of it as maybe I would have liked, but it was just, I didn't want to take the risk. But there are people that are doing Chinese medicine to a degree as well in veterinary medicine, just not as many as here.
So you're planning now that you've had some fine-tuning of acupuncture and herbology of continuing on, because I should say you're now back in the United States, and you're going to be continuing to practice here?
Yes, I am. So I'm moving back to New York City. Took a little break in California, and I plan to work in some private practices. And right now I'm considering doing an acupuncture and rehabilitation medicine internship with my former teacher, Dr. Shea, in the University of Florida. So we're doing applications this fall and then going to continue on from there. I have this problem with being addicted to learning, so it's always never ends.
And because it never changes. I've said it before on the show that when I graduated from veterinary school, the dean got up and said, okay, in 10 years, 50% of everything that you learned is going to be wrong. It's up to you
to know
which of that 50%. And now as things are changing so rapidly, I think we're probably down to 5 years instead of 10. It's always, always something exciting. Would you do it again? Would you go back to China?
I would definitely go back again. Actually, I love being in China, and actually one of the things that it made me realize is it really made me value what I have, how lucky I've been with how much education I've received in the States. I mean, really, the education in the States is so good, and I would love to come back and share more and be part of the education environment. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing, and the more knowledge that everybody can spread, the better, so it helps everyone.
There are certain stereotypes. I think many Americans still view China as a kind of third world country. There's not a lot of money. People don't have the resources to take care of themselves. Poverty very high. So trying to eat, boy, you know, I'll eat whatever I can find. And there were the old stories out there of, here's a stereotype, of Chinese eating dogs and cats. How much of that's really a stereotype? And they probably did at some point. Do they still?
The dog meat trade, unfortunately, is a thing in China. It's not so much in Beijing. It's almost unheard of. But as you make it down, especially into the south, they have even a dog meat festival that they hold every year. Everything about the dog meat trade is illegal. It's not something that is regulated. They're not supervising to make sure the animals are not ingesting chemicals. And a lot of these animals are stolen animals. fortunately, I was able to take part in a big project where this woman was rescuing dog meat truck dogs. And what these animal rescuers would do is they would just stop the trucks as they're trying to cross the border between provinces and basically wait until the authorities could come and confiscate the dogs because, like I said, it's illegal. Not eating dogs is illegal, but the way that they move the dogs, the way that they acquire dogs, they don't have permits for these or health certificates for these dogs. And so while it is still practiced, fortunately, it's becoming more and more out of favor as people are becoming more and more educated about how cruel it is. And me, actually, as a vegetarian, I didn't really understand coming in because I'm thinking, you know, it's cruel to eat one animal, it's cruel to eat the other animal. So, but it's also the way these animals are kept. It's the way that they are slaughtered is especially cruel. And also the fact that they are often stolen. They can be people's pets.
And you were saying before that these pets, they need to be registered. So it's like our licensing that you have to have a licensed pet. Is that for cats and dogs, all pets?
Not cats, but just dogs right now. And so that's just to really make sure that people are getting on top of the rabies vaccine. Because in China, rabies is still quite an issue. I know people don't like to talk about it, but it is very much a possibility that a stray dog can have rabies. And that's why I would always be very, very serious about making sure I wear gloves when the animal comes in off the street because they're not always showing symptoms. In fact, people don't realize this, but they can take 6 months to show symptoms, to go from no symptoms to full-blown biting stage of rabies. So I you absolutely have to be careful. And the registration of the dogs is a way to regulate that.
Dr. Jennifer, this just must have been an experience of a lifetime. How exciting for you. I can imagine your Chinese is a whole heck of a lot better now.
I hope so. I did take some Chinese classes when I was out there too, so that was really fun.
So what was the one thing that really stands out in your mind that you would say, this was the highlight of my stay in China?
I think getting to the point where I felt that people that I was working with began to understand me, getting to the point where we were conversing. I was able to converse in their language so that we would understand each other and being able to form those friendships and bonds with people from another culture in a way that I felt like I would never have had the chance to do had I not spent that time. And I think that, and also one of my coworkers told me that she was glad that she'd been working there because I came there. And that really meant everything to me because she'd been working there for 7 years. There's a lot of things happen in 7 years. But, and to me, you know, I'm just a general practitioner. I'm not a specialist. And, you know, I can't do all the fancy surgeries and orthopedics and stuff that everybody thinks is the most wonderful thing. But the fact that she said that about me was really made me feel amazing.
You had your own gift that translated all barriers. That's amazing. If people want to learn more about the International Center for Veterinary Services, I know you can go on to Google. You can Google it. You can find it. I've looked through the site, and when my trip to China is coming up, I'm going to be stopping in and actually seeing where you had the pleasure of working for 18 months. Dr. Jennifer Repak, thank you so much for being with us. This was fascinating.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz on The Pet Doctor, and I've been chatting with Dr. Jennifer Repak. Hopefully you have a chance to listen in next week. We'll have more information on how you can translate your love in veterinary medicine to possibly other cultures, and you can learn more on how to make yourself the best possible pet owner. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.